I'm Austin.
I'm Bridget.
And I'm Lauren. And this is Tipsy Ghouls, a podcast that searches your neck of the woods for the stories that keep you up at night about true crime, conspiracies, and you guessed it, ghosts.
So without further ado, let's get started.
Austin, what are you eating?
Pierogies.
Yum.
Ooh, that sounds good.
I thought it was like an empanada. And I was like, oh, what the fuck is that?
Had an empanada in forever.
Well, I mean, I guess it's like a Polish empanada.
That's true.
True.
That yeah. is true.
They're all different forms of ravioli.
Yes.
I want to know the first origin of pastry stuffed food is. Like, yeah. Where did it first start?
Yeah, like, what is the genius level of, like, you know, the, like, genealogy, mm-hmm. the base of the, like.
Was it a ravioli first? Was it a calzone? Was it a pierogi? Was it an empanada?
Or, like, a dumpling?
A Pop-Tart.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. A Pop-Tart is a ravioli.
In conclusion, a Pop-Tart is a ravioli. But anyways, hello.
Hi.
Yes, hello.
Welcome to our, what state are we on?
Pennsylvania.
Let me bring it. That would help if I brought up the outline that I made. How about we do that?
I don't have it open yet either.
One of our neighbors.
Perfect. Yes, neighbors, one of our neighbors.
To the east.
Northeast, yes.
We don't go over there very often because we're on the other side of Ohio, but.
I used to go there a lot in college.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, why?
Because I worked for that nonprofit, and I was there, like, every few months, it felt like. There or Maryland.
Mm. Random, but okay.
Very random.
Yeah. It was a lot.
I went to Hershey, Pennsylvania for an Irish dance competition one time. That was fun.
I went there once, Park. And you want to know what happened?
What?
Yes.
The factory workers were on strike, so nothing was open.
That's so sad.
Oh, yeah, sad. I was so excited. I was like, I can't wait to smell chocolate in the air. And then they're like, actually, everyone's on strike.
That's a first world problem if I've ever heard one.
Literally. The park was closed. Everything was closed. Yeah, because everyone was on strike.
We'll have to go back sometime because it is fun. And there's lots of candy.
Can't wait.
Well, I went to Pittsburgh one time for New Year's.
Mm. Oh, was it that trip that I didn't go on? Was that during college?
No.
Was that like that trip I didn't go on?
I have a vague memory of one of our old friends trying to plan a trip to Pittsburgh. Maybe I dreamt that.
No, I went like 4 years ago, I want to say. Mm. 3 years ago. Like right when Jason and I started dating. Mm. Mm.
Yes.
Philadelphia is in Pennsylvania, right?
Sure is. Oh, yeah. I've been there, too.
Correct.
Yes. I haven't been there, but I watch It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which isn't actually filmed
some
there.
Some could
but
say the birthplace of the nation.
Yes.
Yes. I saw the Liberty Bell. I saw Independence Hall. Mm. Ate a Philly cheesesteak with cheese whiz on top of it.
Ooh. Oh, yeah.
So good. I had rolled ice cream for the first time in Philly.
10-year-old me would love to go back.
I would love
All
to
I
go
know,
back.
Honestly,
I just picture the version
year old
from.
Me would love to go back.
Yeah. I just picture the version from "It's Always Sunny" as Philly, which I know is not like the right like way to view it. But if you've never seen the show, it's just like literally like very shitty. It's just. The
I
show.
Mean, there's a lot of homelessness there, but that's the same thing in every major city.
Yeah.
It was weird because there's like all these like obviously historic buildings, you know, from like, you know, Independence Hall, like everything that, you know, like went down in the like colonial era. But they're all surrounded by like modern like skyscrapers and like big buildings and like modern buildings. It's just so weird to
That's
look
so
at.
Weird.
Like, just like, what the hell?
Did you guys know that you can't actually, like, walk up to the Liberty Bell anymore?
Yeah,
like,
it's covered
like, you used to be able to get really close to it.
Yeah, it's
but
covered.
But now it's, like, completely encased.
Mm-hmm. It's probably because it's getting old. They don't want any more, like, damage to it, maybe.
Yeah. I'm sure little shits were throwing stuff at it.
Probably.
Or people were acting like they were on a National Treasure trying to like find clues.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Well, I have a couple more fun facts about Pennsylvania if you guys want to know them.
Sure. Oh, yes, I do more than anything.
This is from actually, what is this? Geneva College. They have this whole like fun fact thing from their campus life section of their website. Said Pennsylvania, the nation's birthplace, was settled in 1643. Given its historical importance, most people immediately associate it with many of the country's important documents. The Constitution, Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, or the American Declaration of Independence. But the state has so many more interesting qualities that make it enticing and unique. Such as, first, I want to put in here that I saw this place called the Mac Mart. I can't remember if it was like on Diners, Dive-Ins, and Drives or like one of those other like different weird shows, but it is a macaroni and cheese place in Philly.
Ooh,
and it looks really, really good. So definitely if you're there, check it out. Haven't tried it. But Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania has been rated 2 times as the most livable city by Places Rated Almanac. The city was honored with the title first in 1985 and most recently in 2007.
Interesting.
After Ohio, Pennsylvania has the highest Amish population in the world. These communities live, work, and worship pretty much the same way they did a few hundred years ago. And you know what else Pennsylvania has? They have sheets.
And they do. They sure do have sheets.
Shit.
I think about that sheets experience a lot.
I loved sheets. At first, that was when the you place say, that we used to go when we were... like on the road.
So good. At first when you say gas station food, you're like, that's disgusting. Oh, you just have to try it. So
only good. Now to be topped by Buc-ee's. Only
I don't know what Buc-ee's
to be
is.
Topped.
I've
never oh, I just had the most godly experience with Buc-ee's. I saw God inside of Buc-ee.
Oh my God.
It's this massive gas station with food and like souvenirs and all this stuff. There's one actually in St. Augustine and Daytona here. So next time you guys come down, we should go.
I am so down.
Me too.
They have these like puffy things called beaver nuggets, and they're like caramel corn, but with like puffs instead of popcorn.
Oh,
yeah. Sounds so good.
Yeah. Oh my and that's God. Just the tip of the iceberg, baby. Mm-hmm. They're good.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah. But back to Pennsylvania things.
Yes. Anyway, before we get too creative on gas station food. Benjamin Franklin inaugurated the country's first public zoo in Philadelphia. The zoo was commissioned in 1859, though the opening was delayed until 1874 due to the American Civil War. The nation's first hospital was the Philadelphia Hospital. Founded in 1751, the facility also includes the nation's first medical amphitheater and the first medical library.
Medical amphitheater?
I don't know.
What yeah, like where they used to watch where it's
oh,
where
like
med
and
students.
Stuff.
Have you ever seen Ratchet?
Yes.
That's
yes.
it. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was thinking like a theater stage, but like you're performing surgery on
I mean,
stage. It's
kind of
like
yes.
that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, when you get right down to it, yeah.
Not wrong.
All right. Let's see. What's some other interesting ones? Okay, here we go. Pat Olivieri invented the famous Philly cheesecake sandwich in the 1930s. Olivieri was a hot dog seller in South Philadelphia who one day decided to put grilled beef on an Italian roll. A cab driver thought it smelled delicious and asked for one steak sandwich. Word spread rapidly through the cabbie circles, and soon enough drivers from all over Philadelphia were visiting Olivieri for steak sandwiches. Cheese was added to the recipe by Olivieri's restaurant manager, Joe Lorenza, in the 1940s.
That might be my favorite so fun fact because I love cheesesteaks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I'm just so gonna end good. It there. Those seem pretty good. Yeah. And the Philly cheesesteak is phenomenal.
I was looking for a weird animal.
It's a good
one.
Place to wrap it up.
Absolutely.
I can't always find any weird animal facts.
Of Philly or of Pennsylvania? Oh yeah.
Yeah, I was trying to look for because we always have a weird animal one.
I really didn't look that hard.
Oh, Punxsutawney Phil.
Oh yeah, I forgot about him. That little bitch.
No more winter.
That counts as an animal one.
He's an animal.
He's an animal.
He is an absolute animal.
Well, I don't have a witty way to transition into this, but Bridget, what are you drinking?
I am actually drinking one of our favorites, a hop tea.
Yum.
Which, if you've never had hop tea, it is a company that makes canned tea, but it's hoppy. So there's like different kinds of tea and different kinds of hops and levels of hoppiness. So it gives you the feeling of like drinking a beer if you like craft beer, but you're not. I just got it at Whole Foods because I went grocery shopping and I was like, this will be perfect. But I have the chamomile one and it has citra hops, which I don't normally like citra, but it's just a wee bit toppy. So,
but a wee bit toppy.
Just a wee bit.
The levels are wee bit, kinda, quite, really, and whoa. Those are the levels of happiness. But it's really good.
I think that white one is my favorite. So good.
Mm-hmm.
So really good. I've never had hop tea before, but I have had hop water before. Mm-hmm. And I got it when I've only had it once. It was when I was in high school, and it was before like I'd ever had like an actual alcoholic drink. So I was like, maybe there's a little bit of alcohol in this. Yeah, I was dumb.
Tried to be a hipster. Yeah, I like hop water.
I like hop water.
14 years old.
I literally, I was a child.
So funny.
This is so good.
You definitely have to, like, in the no hops to full hops pipeline, you got to go beer first.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then transition into the non-alcoholic hoppy drinks.
Yes. But non-alcoholic drink wise, I am not drinking an alcoholic beverage tonight. I am drinking Liquid IV strawberry.
Nice.
Nice.
Yeah.
I am also not drinking an alcoholic beverage tonight. Wow.
We're abandoning our roots.
I know.
We are. We should like schedule one episode a month or something where we're actually drunk so that we can make sure we're tipsy sometimes.
Yeah.
Maybe like three drinks or something. Because we got to stay tipsy sometimes, you know.
True.
But we're all on a journey of health, so we don't want to drink every Tuesday.
Yes.
As I just finished the last bit of my Easter chocolate bunny.
Health, yes.
Quote I'm unquote. So healthy.
Yeah.
If anyone's looking for kind of a healthy recipe, our blender isn't big enough to handle the fucking ice cubes. But it's like protein powder with oat milk and you just blend it with some ice. And it's supposed to come out
like a
smoothie
milkshake.
Thing, like a milkshake. But like I said, my ice is too big. So
gotcha.
It was still really good. But good. Yeah, I'm just drinking water.
No Liquid IV tonight?
No, I'm going to drink it before I go to bed.
Gotcha.
Look at us. Great. Being too responsible.
15 minutes in and we're already on to the stories, everyone.
Look
I hope you're
that.
Happy. I hope you're happy
Look
now.
Wow, now everyone's going to be pissed that we rushed through it.
No, this is what you wanted.
This is what you wanted.
Is this your precious podcast?
You bullied us out of talking to each other.
Yeah.
Fine.
Fine. All right. Well, like I promised, there are no dead children in this story today.
Thank God.
But it Thank is you. Kind of a wild one. It's interesting for sure. My sources are Wikipedia, Only in Your State, and All That's Interesting. Grady Stiles Jr. was born on June 26, 1937 in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, with a deformity of the hands called ectrodactyly, where the hands are deformed into looking like lobster claws. So basically his hands look like this, like the Spock.
Oh.
Yeah. That was one of the characters in American Horror Story.
Yes.
Yeah.
I thought it, sorry yeah, if that I thought was in he was. Story. No, it wasn't.
Okay.
And Grady's
Evan Peters' character.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay. I thought about it while I was writing this and then I was like, "Wait. Wait a second. Cuz this would be perfect." But in Grady's case, it also caused his feet to have the deformation, therefore he couldn't walk. And according to Grady's father, Grady Stiles Sr., the Stiles family had a history of ectrodactyly since the early 1940s. Grady Jr. was the fourth child of Grady Stiles Sr. and his wife Edna. Grady Sr. capitalized on his deformity by traveling as a sideshow act in a traveling carnival.
Yeah, that's so sad.
I know. After Grady Jr. was born and old enough at the age of 7, he started traveling with his father and siblings, and they were dubbed the Lobster Family.
That's all.
Yeah, that's really sad.
I mean, they made good money. It literally said they made like $80,000 a year doing this. So, and all they had to do was just show people their hands.
And that was a long time ago.
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, that's, I mean, okay.
$80,000 is a decent amount today.
Yeah.
I don't feel that sad anymore.
No.
Yeah, I actually take that back.
As you should. So since Grady Jr. could not walk, like I said earlier, he was in a wheelchair for most of his life, which left him with the only option to have very impressive upper body strength. And he actually became like aggressively strong over the years because he had to like scoot himself places and all that. When they weren't traveling with the carnival, the family lived in Gibsonton, Florida, where many other carnival workers lived during their off seasons. Grady Jr. eventually fell in love with another carny, a young woman named Mary Teresa, who ran away to join the circus as a teenager. What a life. Together they married and had two children, one with ectrodactyly, and of course introduced them into the family business. Grady Stiles Jr. was continuing his family's legacy in the carnival realm and became a staple in the community with the rest of his lobster family. He also left a legacy that would tarnish the family's name forever. As his children grew, Grady Jr. began to drink, and paired with his upper body strength, became incredibly abusive towards his wife and children. He would use his claw-like hands to choke Mary until she was near death.
Oh my God.
Oh.
The worst, I know, the worst was yet to come for the Stiles family. When Grady Jr.'s daughter Donna fell in love with a man who Grady Jr. did not approve of and was set to get married in 1978. What happened next is kind of in a gray area. No one's exactly sure what happened. Either Grady Jr. went to go see his daughter's fiance at his home, or he invited the young man over under the guise of having his blessing for the wedding planned for the next day. However, it started the night before the wedding. Stiles, Grady Jr., picked up his shotgun and murdered his daughter's fiance in cold blood. He soon went to trial, having admitted to his act with no remorse whatsoever, but pointed out that he couldn't possibly be imprisoned. No jail could handle his disability, and to confine him to prison would be cruel and unusual punishment.
He thought about that before he did that.
Yeah.
Also, by this time, he had acquired liver cirrhosis from drinking and had emphysema from years of cigarette smoking. And the court actually realized they had no counter-argument, as it was true that the prisons at this time were not well-equipped to deal with many disabilities, and certainly not Grady Jr.'s incredibly rare one. So they let him off with 15 years probation and he returned home.
Yikes.
Grady Jr. had, by this time, divorced his first wife, Mary, remarried another woman, and had two more children. He proceeded to subject them to his drunken rampages, and eventually his second wife divorced him. And if you can solve this fucking mystery here. After that, in 1989, his first wife, Mary, agreed to marry him again in 1989.
Yikes.
Oh my God.
That's a lot.
Seriously?
However, Mary Teresa and her now grown children were not without their limits. Grady Jr. had evaded prison and gained a sense of, you know, I'm above the law. I literally got away with murder. What are you going to do about it? And the beatings became more severe. And Mary had finally reached her breaking point. A few years after she remarried Grady Jr., she paid her 17-year-old neighbor, Chris Wyant, a fellow carny, $1,500 to kill him. Mary Teresa's son from another marriage, Glenn, helped her conceive the idea and carry out the plan. One night, Wyant took a .32-caliber Colt automatic he had found a friend purchase for him into Grady Jr.'s trailer and shot him dead at point-blank range. None of them denied that they had intended to kill Grady Jr. During the trial, his wife spoke at length of his abusive history. "My husband was going to kill my family," she told the court. "I believe that from the bottom of my heart." And at least one of their children, Kathy, testified against him as well. The jury convicted Wyant of second-degree murder and sentenced him to 27 years in prison. They charged his wife and her son Glenn with first-degree murder. She received a sentence of 12 years in prison. She successfully appealed her conviction and began to serve her sentence in February of 1997. She had tried to get Glenn to take a plea bargain, but he refused, and the court sentenced him to life in prison. Just as a significant portion of his living family was being tried for his murder, Grady Stiles Jr.'s body was put to rest, or unrest, as it were. So-called Lobster Boy was so disliked, not just in his family but within the community, that the funeral home could not find anyone willing to be pallbearers.
Oh my God.
And yeah, that's is the quick and terrifying story of Lobster Boy Grady Stiles Jr.
Man. Just a quick synopsis of a murderer.
Yes. Quick. There wasn't really any other, like, nitty-gritty details. Like, literally, that's, like, all it was. Like, there's nothing to go really into detail with it. So, I just thought it was really interesting.
Yeah.
Carny life, man.
And I know. He was featured. he was played by Evan Peters in American Horror Story Freak Show.
Oh, yeah.
Man, it had to be, like, intimidation and manipulation to make Mary, or was her name Mary, too? Mary.
Well, maybe, like, she was like, oh, he's changed, something, whatever. Yeah.
Or she was afraid for her life and was like, I'll just kill him.
That, too.
Fuck it. I mean, let's just be very clear. People don't change.
Right.
Let's just be very clear.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't imagine the circumstances of that being anything different than, like, I'm afraid he's going to hurt me if I don't marry him again.
Yeah.
You know.
But moral of the story, people don't change. Don't get back with your ex.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Moral of the story, don't talk to your ex anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Just keep him cut off. Keep him blocked. Exactly. No. This is your sign not to go back with your ex.
Yes. Do not. Exactly. Do not.
Yeah.
Do not.
Don't you do it.
Don't
you do it. Speaking of things you shouldn't do, though, there's something you shouldn't be doing when you visit the Devil's Den, and I will tell you about it in just a little bit.
Oh, the Devil's Den.
Ooh.
Yeah. So the Devil's Den is located at Gettysburg, and it was a part of the famous battle at Gettysburg.
Interesting.
Yeah. Oh.
My sources this week are PennLive.com, History.net, or HistoryNet.com, CivilWarGhost.com, and the Washington Post. According to early accounts from the area, the tangled outcropping of rocks was a Native American hunting ground for centuries before the famous battle at Gettysburg. A Gettysburg writer named Emanuel Bushman wrote in an 1880 article of the many unnatural, supernatural sights and sounds that were reported in the area of the Round Tops and what he called the Indian Fields. He wrote that the early settlers had told stories of ghosts that had been seen there and that Indian war whoops could still be heard on certain nights. In addition, he reported that strange Indian ceremonies also took place there. In 1884, Bushman also wrote that the idea that an ancient tribe had once lived near the site of Devil's Den, that he believed the scattering of boulders to have been part of a tall pyramid. He stated the crevices in the rocks bore evidence of this and that the pyramid had undoubtedly been destroyed by some forceful blast. While this is extremely doubtful, it does give the reader an idea of the lore that surrounded the area even before the battle. Also, according to local legend, the name Devil's Den was actually in use before the battle took place. Most everyone in their letters home and in the explorations of the battlefield after the fight referred to the rocks as a desolate and ghostly place, or mentioned the ominous character of the rocks. Many others felt that the rocky outcropping actually marked the entrance to a cavern, and while no cave exists there, those who visit the location can understand the mistake. The rocks are piled so high that the crevices between them seem to plunge down into total darkness. But how the area got its name remains a mystery. Many believe the strange atmosphere of the area itself may have contributed to the designation. Another legend persists that the Devil's Den was also known for being infested with snakes. The legends say that one gigantic snake in particular eluded the local hunters for many years, and they were never able to capture or kill him. He was allegedly nicknamed the Devil, and thus the area of the rocks was called his den. No matter how the area got its name, it was apparently already considered a strange and haunted spot before the battle, at least according to Emanuel Bushman. In the years which would follow, the Devil's Den would gain even more fearsome reputations. So, that is a bit of backstory for the Devil's Den before the battle, and now is some information about the battle. So the broken ground of the Devil's Den lies in the angle between Plum Run and the small tributary branch. The steep eastern face becomes a ridge running to the west, some 100 feet lower than nearby Little Round Top. Between the two, Plum Run creates a valley where the ground is marshy in some places, and many of the boulders in Devil's Den are up to 20 feet tall. Major General Daniel Sickles, whose three corps occupied the low southern end of the Union position on the cemetery ridge, decided a rise where a wheat field lay some three-quarter miles to his front offered a better position. Sorry, this is a lot of battle information. So
I'm into
and
it.
It's not something I'm used to reading. It's just like some stuff is in like Roman numerals and stuff, so it's hard to differentiate between three capital I's or lowercase L's and three He moved his corpse forward to occupy the wheat field, a peach orchard north of it, and the Devil's Den to the southwest. One of Sickles' brigades, led by Brigadier General John Henry Hobart Ward, comprised of six regiments and two companies of sharpshooters, occupied the area along Emmitsburg Road near the Devil's Den. The 4th Maine Regiment was positioned east of Plum Run, while the rest of the brigade, 20th Indian, 86th New York, and 124th New York, were on the opposite side. Atop the crest of the ridge were four 10-pound Parrott rifles of Captain James Smith's 4th New York Independent Battery. Around 4 p.m., Hood's division launched its assault. Hood himself was put out of battle when shell fragments struck him in the arm, and he would hang useless for the rest of his life. Not he. His arm. His arm would hang useless.
Wait, what?
His arm would just hang. He was just vegetable. Yeah. Rest of his life, a vegetable.
Just hanging out.
Just chilling. Hanging, Jay chilling. Literally hanging. The 1st Texas and 3rd Arkansas of Brigade General Jerome B. Robinson Brigade, sorry, lots of repetitive words, struck Ward's line west of Devil's Den, and the 44th and 48th Alabama of Brigadier General Evander Law's Brigade came up the Plum Run Valley on the east side. Intense stand-up fighting ensued, and Ward called for his 99th Pennsylvania Regiment to join the fight and reinforce the troops from Plum Run. A second Confederate wave of the brigades of Brigadier Generals Henry Benning and George Anderson, all Georgia regiments, attempted to exploit a gap between Ward's brigade and the Regis Day, I don't know how to say that, in the wheat field. Anderson's men were repulsed. After severe fighting, the Texans captured 3 of Smith's guns. The 40th New York and 6th New Jersey were pulled from the wheat field to do battle in an area that would become known as the Slaughter Pen, where they covered the retreat of Ward's men. After Ward's retreat, Confederate sharpshooters moved into the boulder-strewn Devil's Den, firing at the Federals atop Little Round Top with telling effect, dropping officers and artillerymen. Reportedly, among their victims were General Stephen D. Weed and 1st Lieutenant Charles Hazlett, whose cannon were supporting the infantry of Weed and Colonel Strong Vincent. By day's end, Hood's men still held Devil's Den. So that's a little battle, a backstory of the battle. And now on to the things that we all care about. So according to park rangers, there is a curse that falls on anyone who takes rocks from Devil's Den. Rangers say that every few months they receive letters in the mail returning stolen rocks from the park. Most are accompanied with letters telling the tale of the taker's misfortune. While some employees of Gettysburg don't believe in the curse, the thieves believe that is their only way to end their string of bad luck. One letter in particular stood out to me about a man whose misfortune after stealing the rocks from the site got pretty rough for him. So here's his letter. Around 10 or 11 years ago, my wife at the time and I visited Gettysburg. We loved Gettysburg and its history and had removed 3 small stones. We didn't know then how the removal of the stones would affect our lives, and we didn't know that they were cursed. It wasn't long after that our lives fell apart. My wife took my son, walked out on me. I lost my house and the majority of what I owned and ended up in prison for 9 years. My now ex-wife has fared no better. She has been plagued with health problems and other issues. When I was released from prison, I was able to find a place to live. As I was going through what my mother was able to salvage, I found the stones and remembered what I had read in prison about the stones being cursed. I'm sorry that we had taken them. Sincerely, it doesn't have his name. But that's just one of many letters that have been written to Gettysburg returning the pebbles or rocks that were stolen. One of the articles I read talked about how, like, someone got hit by a train. They survived, but, like, they were fine. But they got hit by a train, which is a lot. People have lost all their money. People have been broken up with. So
that's ridiculous.
Don't take the rocks. Just don't do it.
What if one gets stuck in your shoe and you accidentally steal it?
Oh my God. I would die.
Fuck.
Yeah. I'd literally, if I went there, I would take a little like pin or stick and make sure every single rock was cleaned out of my shoes.
Yes. No.
All right. Now let's move on to the ghosts. The stories about Devil's Den being haunted began not long after the battle itself. Local legend had it that two hunters had wandered onto the battlefield one day and had gotten lost in the woods near the Rocky Ridge. They had completely lost their way when one of them looked up and saw a dim figure of a man standing atop the boulders. He gestured with one hand as if pointing the way he and the hunters realized it was in that direction they needed to travel. He looked back to thank the man, but the apparition had vanished. Next. Even those who are skeptical about the hauntings of Gettysburg and who claim that the stories of ghosts here are recent addition to the battlefield admit that there have always been tales recalled about supernatural doings at the Devil's Den. While admittedly, most of these stories are of a rather recent vintage, Emanuel Bushman wrote of many unnatural and supernatural sightings and sounds back in 1880, and local lore has always included odd happenings in the area. One afternoon in the 1970s, a woman was said to have gone into the National Park Service Information Center to inquire about the possibility of ghosts on the battlefield. One can imagine just how many times this question must have come up, and although the official position of the park is to neither confirm nor deny the ghostly tales, the ranger on duty was reported to have asked why the woman wanted to know. The visitor quickly explained that she had been out on the battlefield that morning, photographing the scenery. She had stopped her car at the Devil's Den and had gotten out to take some photos in the early morning light. The woman stated that she had walked into the field of small boulders, which are scattered in front of the den itself, and had paused to take a photo. Just as she raised the camera to her eye, she sensed the uncomfortable feeling of someone standing beside her. When she turned to look, she saw a man had approached her. She described this man as looking like a hippie with long, dirty hair, ragged clothing, a big floppy hat, and noticeably no shoes. The man looked at her and then simply said, "What are you looking for? Or what you're looking for is over there," he said, and pointed to behind her. The woman turned her head to see just what the unkempt fellow was pointing at. And when she turned around again, he had vanished. There was no trace of him anywhere. A month or so later, the same ranger was on duty at the information desk when another photographer had come in and asked almost the same question. He had been taking photos at the Devil's Den, only this time he had taken a photo about a month before in which the image of a man had appeared on the exposed frame. A man who had not been there when the photo was taken. When asked what the man had looked like, he also described the man as looking like a hippie and also mentioned his long hair, old clothing, and the fact that he was barefoot. So, probably the same man.
Probs.
During the war, many of the Confederate soldiers, and especially those connected with the fighting at the Devil's Den, were from Texas. At that time, this was America's most remote frontier, and most of these men did not receive packages from home containing shoes and clothing as many of the men from the states in the immediate vicinity did. Because of this, the wild Texas boys were often unkempt and dirty, lacking shoes and new clothing.
Interesting. Huh. Yeah, I was going to say, why is there a hippie at a battleground?
Yeah. Trying to protect the rocks, man.
Yeah. Just good vibes.
So, good vibes only.
Good vibes.
Since those reports from the 1970s, the same soldier has been reported several times in and around the rocks at the Devil's Den. According to some of the theories, a number of visitors have mistaken the man for a Civil War reenactor and have even had their photographs taken with him. The accounts go on to say that when they return home and have their film roles developed, the man is always missing from the photo.
Ooh. Oh, hate that. Spooky.
Oh,
my God.
In addition to this apparition at Devil's Den, there are also reports of ghostly riders who have been seen and who have turned and vanished. The sounds of gunfire and men shouting, which cannot be explained, and literally dozens of photographs with the alleged to be evidence of supernatural activity. And speaking of photographs, another paranormal happening in the immediate area is the reported failure of cameras in the nearby triangular field. According to the stories, it has been said that the video and still cameras do not work properly, if at all, while the photographer is standing in the field. Huh. How much of that is truth is unknown, as people have been able to see many photos which have been taken there without incidents. However, there are also dozens of anecdotal reports and reliable people who claim the unnatural failures of their equipment in the area. Could this be the result of energy still lingering behind? So regardless, wherever you go in Gettysburg, even if it's not at Devil's Den, you are bound to run into something paranormal. But don't take the rocks from Devil's Den. Don't do it.
Yeah, I want to go, but make sure I leave everything.
take shoes with no tread.
Yes. Yeah, wear those little booties like you wear.
The most worn down shoes you own, wear them there.
You know what? Just go barefoot.
Yeah.
And then you just too clean can be a hippie on a battlefield.
Yeah.
Yes. Live out your dreams.
Yes.
They have those stickers that you can put on the bottom of your shoes so you can go, or of your feet, so you can go barefoot.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, just perfect. Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah.
Just wear those toe shoes. For running.
Oh, those are gross.
Those freak me out.
Or you could wear those little booties that people wear when they're going into new homes.
Yes.
Like at the hospital. Ooh,
yeah. Yes.
Yeah. That'd be good.
Absolutely.
Just, you know what? Just wear a hazmat suit.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Just in case.
Just
be safe.
Just get fucking like sprayed down with a power washer before you leave.
Yes.
You know what? Even better. Just don't go.
Yeah, just don't go.
That, yep. Just look. That works too.
Just look
at pictures online.
Exactly.
Listen to Austin's story and just imagine yourself being there.
Yes. If you can, through all of my weird mishaps trying to read military jargon.
You did a great job. You're doing that great, sweetie.
Yes.
Thank you.
That was really good.
That was.
All right, Beej, bring us on
very
home.
Spooky. All right. Mine is a little shorter, but that's okay. And I am going classic cryptid tonight. We haven't had a cryptid story in a while.
We haven't.
I love a good cryptid. I love a good cryptid.
This one sounds cute. Like, I like this one a lot.
Aw.
All right. So, for my story, my sources are penlive.com, and there was a YouTube channel. I meant to look it up, but it was basically like cryptids by state. So, he went over, like, cryptids in each state. So, in the town of Raystown sits a lake that may hold a famous cryptid called the Raystown Ray, or Ray for short. It may not be famous worldwide. The Loch Ness Monster definitely takes the cake for most famous lake monster. But Ray is definitely well known around Pennsylvania. So the common description of Ray seems to be similar to the Loch Ness Monster. A large serpent-like creature, maybe 50 to 60 feet long, with a body that remains submerged and a serpent-like neck topped with a reptilian head. That occasionally appears above the water. So classic Loch Ness Monster. Could be related in the cryptid universe. Could be cousins, maybe. At least it seems like it. And the first sighting of Ray wasn't in the Raystown Lake. Raystown Lake is actually a man-made lake, and they, similar to Caesar's Creek, like flooded a town. There was a dam called the Raystown Dam that was built in 1907, and they knocked that down in 1971 to make the lake. So Ray was actually spotted first in the dam in 1962. And I couldn't really find like any firsthand sightings, like accounts of sightings, but a lot of articles seem to kind of repeat the same information, but it's all referencing some reports. But there is a website I'll talk about at the end that you might be able to find them on. So most cryptid specialists say that creatures like these are most likely not found in man-made lakes, but since this one was found in the dam before the lake was created, Ray is kind of an exception to this rule. So the people that were cited in this article, cryptid specialists, say that there is probably a lot of a good chance that monsters like these are in Lake Erie and places like that, but that Ray is definitely possible.
So I'm just like picturing like a dude named Ray.
I know.
Like, see, Ray, I keep picturing this like cartoon stingray.
Yeah. I actually found some pictures. I'll send. Oh, did I upload them somewhere? I took a screenshot. Here, I'll text you guys pictures because I like to look at pictures. Here, so here's the first picture, which I'll explain. The second one is pretty shocking. So if you're listening along, you can look up the 2007 picture of Ray. This is like the
interesting. Oh.
Interesting.
Yeah. Hmm. So
I was definitely picturing a stingray.
I know. I was thinking the same.
Yeah. It's because it's a raised town. That's like they just named it Ray.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like the name is Ray.
It's a little misleading.
A little misleading, but it's high.
That's why I said it's in the universe of cryptids related to the Loch Ness Monster, because it looks a lot like it.
Interesting.
So that second picture I sent you guys is the 2007 tourist photo, and that remains the best photo captured so far. And if you're not looking at it, if you're listening along, it basically is a shot from above the lake. Like, almost looks like it's from like up on a hill or like a drone, which I don't think is from a drone, but it's that angle. But it looks like Ray's just swimming along in the lake, and two of the humps of its body are kind of exposed out of the lake, and then its head coming up. So a team from the show Fact or Faked actually came down to Raystown to search for Ray, and they were able to recreate the picture with a floating log, which is kind of disappointing.
That is really disappointing.
I know.
But also, but like, they weird. Also,
I know, because it's definitely floating in a weird way. There'd have to be like a weird like downshoot of it to balance it like that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, very strange. But they also scanned the lake with sonar and like dove at night, and they even dragged some bait around to try to lure Ray out. But even with all these failed attempts, they said that the witnesses seemed really credible, and it's very possible that Ray is down there somewhere. So they pretty much deemed it like undetermined, that it's possible that it's real. So despite the recreation of the photo as well, believers still trust that that's the original photo of Ray. And locals are convinced that Ray is actually an herbivore, because there are never really any unexplained animal carcasses showing up, and this is pretty rare for cryptids. I feel like they're usually like sighted eating animals and people. But it would also make it really easy for Ray to stay undetected while eating vegetation underwater. And a lot of the artist depictions have like seaweed kind of stuff coming out of his mouth.
Aww.
And one year, the second picture, the first picture I sent you, I'm not sure what year it was, but one year, organizers of an annual Raystown Ski Club water show almost canceled the show when a large creature thought to be Ray was lurking near the jump ramps that would be used by the skiers. But by showtime, it seemed to have moved on. So they continued with the show. And that's that picture with the big dark spot underneath. And you can see by the style of the show. Like, this was a long time before you could, like, edit a picture to look like that.
Huh.
Looks like maybe the 70s or 80s or something. So even though he is very infamous, there haven't really been many sightings reported in the past 20 years or so. There's been a handful since 2008 and the last one in 2011. There's another picture that I didn't look up, but it's basically some two pretty big waves coming out of, like, perfectly still water. And then in the middle, you can see, like, it looks like a giant eel's body kind of in the middle of it. So people have captured some random little things and seen some little things. And you can go to raisedtownray.com to report your sightings. And they also sell merch, t-shirts and patches and stuff.
Oh my God.
I know. And he looks pretty cute. And is like, and all of his merch. I was just looking through the website. For some reason, the pictures on their website don't load, but looks to be like there's some old pictures and some new sightings. I think the newest sighting says a creature just breaking the water spotted close to the dam. It broke the surface 6 or 7 times, and the individual was able to close in and get a picture. If only this would work. Please open the picture. Hello, Raisedtown Ray. I'm gonna need you to update your website.
Crashing.
Raymond.
I know. Raymond. but yeah, if you want to show your love for our vegan Loch Ness monster, you can go to Raisedtown Ray and buy a shirt.
Oh, he looks, he like, sounds cute. Just like he's just like chilling.
Yeah.
We love life. An environmentally conscious serpent.
We do. Exactly. We stand. We have no choice but to stand.
He's just living his life. I'd put him at the top of my like favorite cryptids now because he seems really nice.
Pretty chill. Pretty chill dude. Mm-hmm.
And like when he was at the ski thing, like, he just wanted to watch. He's right. Like, oh shit. I wanted to see some ski jumps.
This is the exact example of why humans aren't ready for aliens to like introduce themselves, because as soon as something comes near a human, they're like, fucking kill it,
dude. Yeah. I know, like, what the hell.
I know, like, what, so, if he's nice, God,
people, what if he just literally wanted to watch people and cheer them on?
Yeah, like if we lived back when like new animals were being discovered all the time, like, you would have to live with such an open mind. Nowadays it'd be like new animal discovered and it'd be like, kill it with fire.
Literally, yeah.
It's from the deep state inside the it's from the Jesus. Underground tunnels.
From the Earth's crust.
Yeah. But yeah, a little cryptid story. Not super exciting, but it's fun that like even the people that like fact or faked were like, well,
that is funny.
We feel like it's real. We couldn't find it, but
this is a fact.
Yes.
This is, we are saying it is a fact.
I mean, it's a
really
it.
Big lake too.
Why not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's
there's
pretty
a lot
easy
of stuff
for,
out there that we don't know about.
Yeah. And this lake at the deepest is like 185 feet deep.
That's too
so
deep.
There's definitely places for him to hide.
Oh, for sure.
But yeah.
That's too deep.
Yes.
Well, we're not trying to hide, are we, Beach?
No, we're not trying to hide. We're everywhere. You can find us all over the damn internet. primarily, obviously, on streaming platforms. I imagine if you're listening, you know where you would like to listen to us. But we are on most of the major streaming platforms. And our main form of communication with you guys is through Instagram. So you can find us at Tipsy Ghouls Podcast on there. That's where we post updates for ever having like technical difficulties or like double episodes like today. Surprise. We posted
Surprise.
On there.
And I didn't post it. So
that's okay. That's okay. Most of the
things.
Time we post stuff on there. But that is our main form of communication. So you can go there and follow us. You can also send us a DM on there if you have a story that you want us to talk about. We will shout you out and read your story on the episode. It can be for a state that's coming up or even a past date or really just any story you want to tell us. We'll read it. if it's a longer story or you have like pictures or something, you can email us at tipsygoalspodcast@gmail.com and we will do the same thing. We also have a Patreon, which is not super active at the moment, but that's where we have some of our ad-free episodes, and we did a pre-show that we might start up again now that our intros are shorter. And it's $5 a month. You can become a ghoulie on there. We also are selling buttons on Etsy, so it's a little artwork that Austin had commissioned for us that has each of us in our respective categories, like drawn as ghosts and little things. They're very cute.
They're so
$3.99. Yeah. They're very cute. They're $3.99 with free shipping. That is a steal if I've ever heard one. And if you wanted to leave us a free gift, something that costs you no money, maybe just 30 seconds of your life, you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Obviously, you can always just give us 5 stars. We'd love that too. But if you have any suggestions, like some people suggested that we make our intros shorter and we did listen. So if you have any other things that you would like to see change, or just tell us that you love us, which we'll accept as well, you can leave a review on Apple Podcasts.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yes, definitely.
Yes. And next week, we're going to Rhode Island. So that'll be fun.
I know. Here I was just thinking, like, we're all going to have the same topic, I feel like, because Rhode Island is so small.
Famous for their chicken.
Don't they have, Coney Island?
Rhode Island Reds.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Chicken. It's a type of chicken.
Oh, my God. That is so funny.
Yeah, I don't know anything else about Rhode Island.
Oh, it's home to Brown University. I didn't know that.
Really? Oh.
Rhode Island, a U.S. state in New England, is known for sandy shores and seaside colonial towns.
All right.
Great.
That voice, though. seaside colonial towns.
Come visit.
I wonder how long it would take to drive through.
Like long ways?
Sure.
Probably a couple hours.
Yeah. Man, there's a million people crammed in there.
Dang.
That's a lot. Yeah. It's not a very big place.
No.
Hey, they're Democrats, though, so I'm here for it.
Hey.
Are you Philly cheesesteaks ready to close out this episode?
Yes. Nice and cheesy as always. Philly cheesesteaks. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Well, until next time, don't get back together with your ex.
If you want a souvenir from a national park or anywhere, just go to the gift shop. Don't steal a rock.
And if you've ever wanted a mystical cryptid friend, I would say the Raystown Ray is probably the nicest one you can find.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Sweet.
And remember,
question everything.
Goodbye.
Bye, bitch. I like pictures.
Grady, sorry.
The first word.
Grady. What?